Hey, the following is a conversation with Beryl, who's really passionate about using AI to help save the planet and, you know, spreading the AI power in the meantime. She's a scientist with like many years of experience in the field, and she's the head of School of AI in the Netherlands. We're gonna chat to her about all of that, plus, you know, applications of AI that she's created, like the award-winning app that, you know, takes, like, uses space images to like help farmers, and a lot more in this episode. And if you want to give this podcast a listen, you know, from like your smartphone and stuff, you can basically type in the search the AI Wizard Show, wherever you get your podcast, and you know, basically listen there. But anyway, I hope you enjoy this conversation, and like leave your comments down below, and definitely go and check out Beryl on Twitter and LinkedIn. The links are in the description. I hope you enjoy this episode so much. Hey, what's up everybody, it's the AI Wizard Show, and I have Beryl today with me, and we're ready to chat about a lot of exciting things. Beryl, why don't you say hi, introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, it's Beryl, and many thanks to Ivan to bring up this idea to meet here on his channel. I'm so excited, and I'm so happy to meet you.
Thank you. I'm totally pumped to meet you too. Why don't you, you know, talk about a bit of your background, like what do you do, and yeah, what like excites you about AI?
Thank you. So I've got a PhD degree from 10, 11 years ago from now, in electrical and electronics engineering. But I didn't become an electronics engineer in meaning of doing hardware stuff. I was mostly interested in signal processing, and signal is also images, of course, image processing. So I diverged my path to computer vision and machine learning stuff. And I've done a lot of machine learning and even parallel processing with FPGAs, for instance, implementing neural networks. That time, back in time, in the beginning of 2000, for instance, or 19-something. but that time, there was no GPU available, and there was TensorFlow.
So like you learned about, you know, neural networks like in the early 2000s?
Yes, but you know? that time they I was working on neural networks literally, and I was really excited to work on them, and but that time they were not called AI, you know. And indeed there was a drop in the interest, and I became also more computer vision oriented, because neural networks were not very efficient to learn things with small nets, you know, and they were not very powerful to do actual stuff. In theory, they looked good, but we didn't have hardware to implement it. And it was like an idea probably that's impossible to do. So we were thinking about how human thinks, and we can just replicate it. But that didn't go that way with the hardware capacity that time. And we just lost interest with neural nets, but I was still working on machine learning stuff on computer vision. And yeah, regarding my background, I worked in, first after my PhD, I worked in German Aerospace Center to process satellite images with computer vision and to track objects, to detect objects, to make 3D reconstruction from satellite images. I worked at TU Delft later, and later after TU Delft, I worked on my company, and I wanted to be back in academia shortly after I turned back to academia, and currently I'm at University of Twente. I'm both involved in research programming, again doing 3D reconstruction, and SLAM, maybe some people know who watch you already, simultaneous localization and mapping, widely used with self-driving cars. and I'm implementing SLAM, and I'm also engaged with teaching lectures. So we also built our school of AI. Maybe we will talk a little bit later. It's a volunteering activity I carry. And the idea was to gather up all AI interested people, because AI is a hype again. Now we've got TensorFlow, now we've got Keras or PyTorch, other people use. I'm not using PyTorch. And we've also seen that those libraries came up suddenly. Everybody became AI developer. And I was honestly feeling like I didn't know Python much. And with my industrial background, I knew C++. And in academia, we are mostly asked to use MATLAB. And those libraries are mostly supporting Python, as you know. And I also felt a lot of lack myself, how to use these nice tools and just blend them with my background, and how to make also good use of these tools for our environment, for healthcare. Apparently, if these tools really detect diseases or make prediction about future, about yield estimation, how the weather is changing, if these tools can support us, can we make use of it in real life? And that just triggered me that I want to put more attention on that. And I want more people with me who put attention on this. And how we can start small by small with baby steps, this school of AI came up. And it's still going on. And we try to keep it a little bit like fun activity, networking, which really works. Currently, we met with many partners to write project proposals together through School of AI. But we also try to just extend our own knowledge. And yeah,
like how did School of AI came about? You are currently like the head of School of AI in the Netherlands, right?
So School of AI was first idea came from Siraj Rawa, YouTuber.
Yes, sure.
It was his idea, and he made a YouTube video. I want to make a global network of AI people teaching AI locally everywhere. And please make an application with this application form if you want to be one of the local deans, he called. And that time I made an application and I was selected as a dean. Then he said, you take over all the Netherlands because you are very active, you organize the events there. I said, okay. So that started very good. But later I think it became really big that Siraj can follow. So people were also diverging, do their local stuff, because depending on the region, depending on availability of people, it worked differently in different local area. And some people wanted to charge money, for instance, for courses or make them more like daily based lectures. But for me, it was not the case. I'm working full time, and all other people who follow me at our School of AI also work full time. They can only attend once in a month and after work hours. So that worked totally differently for different people.
And like, I'm not sure I understand. You were talking about how like what was the problem that some people were like wanting to charge, like some people who you asked to give presentation at School of AI, they then wanted to like go and do their like paid courses or like
paid courses. And I think there is nothing wrong with it. They just turned it into a startup, for instance. They registered a company and they turned their local School of AI to a business. I think that's also very nice. That could be also an idea. I could also do that if I had full time. It's very interesting idea. Why not? I could maybe do full-time paid and some free lectures like something, but I've got other commitments. I've got my academic track. So that for my side, that doesn't work. But I appreciate people who do that. Also, I don't think it's wrong. It just worked different in different places.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, some of the people who first like accepted the like school of AI model then basically diverged to make like a business out of it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. When you try to now organize a school of AI like meetup, what do you try to include there? People come there from, you know, the local area, like, and when you're like organizing event, like what do you want the people to, you know, basically walk away from the event with?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that's still, even after 1 year, it's difficult for me to answer. Because people are coming from very different backgrounds. Some people come from hospitals, and they don't know any programming, and they are not interested to know even. But they want to understand what AI can do to improve healthcare. And I think this is a very good idea that they do. And sometimes some startups come, they want to see if they can hire new people there, they can catch some talents, or they can grab some new toolbox that they can embed to their system, for instance. And that also happens. We show a new free toolbox which is commercially available, then they say, I can use it in my startup. So we've got students coming, they want to learn how to do better programming and to do better projects. So yeah, there are many
really
different people coming with different passion. And I try to find a general getaway for satisfying most of them, hopefully. It's a little bit challenging. And just to give an example, we try to keep it like addressing all some little technical details, some news, for instance, what is up to date in this field that you can benefit, and some general discussion on how to use AI for good.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, you've been like at it for a year, right? For a year?
Yes, yes.
And did you see like any change in the kind of people that have attended, you know, like a year ago? Like maybe, you know, I don't know, like, do you see a change with people who were like attending a year before versus now? Like maybe it's, you know, you mentioned like people from hospitals and like from, you know, more diverse backgrounds are coming in. So like, what kind of change in people have you noticed?
I think this is a very good question, because I do see change that more academic people are coming, and more people from universities are coming, and they want to teach courses also. They tell me they want to share their knowledge. And I think it went into more educational and academic direction. Nevertheless, we've got still visitors from other fields, so we don't want to make it so much mathematical overload. We just keep it like these are things, but if you want details, please reach there or contact us. And we also try to keep the upper level active to keep the evening entertaining, useful for other people who went all the way there.
Do you remember like your first School of AI meetup? What kind of people showed up? Like how many people, you know, what was it about? Like your very first School of AI event?
Yes, very good question. I think when we started, we were more diverse, indeed. Mm-hmm. And there were also people who just saw something happening. They just knocked the door and they said they don't know what AI is. Mm-hmm. And they just want to see what's happening there. I think now people in my area mostly aware what's happening. In at School of AI. So they can make more conscious choices if they want to benefit from it, going there or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Like the first people, you know, they were like, yeah. And would you say that the amount of people that like didn't know what AI was and were curious that, you know, first were coming in, like, would you say that now more of the people that come in, like, they have some basic knowledge of what the AI is, like,
Ooh,
that...
Your questions are amazing, Ivan.
Thank you.
In the last meetup, somebody at the end of the course asked me, what is intelligence?
Yeah,
I
was
like,
deep.
Okay, everybody knows artificial intelligence, but I cannot answer what is intelligence. So, yeah, of course, now they know what to expect about AI, but we still sometimes have just open conversations, discussions on what is intelligence or what could be AI in other terms.
What do you think is intelligence?
Oh, that's I couldn't answer, but I don't think we can answer. We can
mm-hmm.
have our own definitions, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I read a lot, and I thought maybe someday I will get an answer. Some books
mm-hmm.
about that go religious, some books about that go spiritual or philosophical. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard that, you know, some people define intelligence as like being able to solve, you know, complex problems. So do you think there is like a deeper, you know, definition of what the intelligence means?
I think
like,
it's a bit larger than this.
Mm-hmm.
It's got also intelligence state, like being in the flow. And
mm-hmm.
when you are in the flow, you are in the more general intelligence, which operates everything. And sometimes when you're in the flow, you have some sudden ideas come into your mind. For instance, maybe I shouldn't
mm-hmm.
choose this road, but go this road.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, when that trigger comes to you on that road, maybe that you didn't go, there was an accident, for instance, something like that. Or maybe I'm just making up, but I'm feeling
mm-hmm.
like there is more general intelligence. And I don't think we are like separate people, separate
mm-hmm.
objects. We are all connected. All trees,
mm-hmm.
for instance, connected to ground. They are connected
yeah,
to flowers.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And we see that there's separation between, but it's just because we don't see the air. But if
mm-hmm.
you include the air and the particles inside, there's no place that I stop and you start. We are just in one overall
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
molecules group together. And what I am, I define I am here, is a blob of energy now. That's probably we are just like focused energy pieces in one big energy, and that's probably the bigger intelligence. And of course, this small blob of energy is also trying to solve mathematical problems or write an algorithm focused. That's a part of maybe analytical intelligence is also there.
Mm-hmm. So the answer to what is intelligence is likely somewhere in between, like particles interacting with each other and those, you know, higher concepts, you know, that we came up that define intelligence.
This all
yeah.
energy is an intelligence itself. So that's all, everything together, all this making decision by itself. I mean, making decisions to make forms by itself. I mean, how does look at a bird? Maybe it's got
mm-hmm.
patterns, and how the next feather decide what color to be. So in total, you see that pattern. So
it's kind of like the laws of
general intelligence altogether.
Yeah, it's kind of like the laws of physics in a way, you know, are intelligent, right?
Yes, like, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
But again, this is my definition. So anybody else could define differently.
Yes. So your definition is could you repeat it again, summarize it a bit?
So my definition is there's very big energy, which could be intelligence, and we are all this energy all together. Because there's no border between things. If we don't see the air, we say, here I stop, you start. But actually, if we were seeing the particles which are there, there in particle levels, molecule levels, there is no place that my skin stops. And your skin and you start. So that's all particles are one together. And all planet is one together. All universe is one together. So I believe that is the intelligence all together.
Yeah. It's deep, you know. It's a... It's deep. Yeah, I'm just thinking about it. I guess you know, if we're gonna study it, you know, it's gonna, you know, eventually come down from, you know, mathematical models to something more, you know, physics related and then energy. But yeah, it's way
more
deeper
physics
than
or physics related, I guess, indeed.
Yeah. So one thing that really stood out to me about you is that you are really motivated to use AI to help the planet, to help farmers and fight climate change. So could you maybe talk about why you think AI is like how you think AI can help to, you know, help to save the planet, basically?
Oh yeah, that's a very good point. So again, I'm very much triggered about this topic. It is only because we are one thing together. If I'm hurting you, I'm hurting myself. If I'm hurting soil, treating bad to soil, I'm treating bad to myself. If there's no border where I stop and something else starts, if everything is me, anything that's bad going on in environment, it's hurting me, and it's just killing me. So I try to save myself by saving the planet, because I am the planet. It's like here, what you see is the small body of me, I say, and everything together is bigger body of me. But it's me.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, if you pollute the air, then you're gonna breathe that air in yourself and cause, you know, some bad things happening to your lungs and stuff. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And then it comes to using our analytical mind, because we are just having fun with it in our lifetime. This bigger mind is working by itself, but this analytical mind, we can use it to do stuff, to solve problems, to help to our small body, which tries to survive by coping diseases, finding good food and stuff. And with this analytical mind, why don't we make some tools? It might be software, hardware tools. Why don't we use it to design, for instance, some algorithms which process larger amount of data that we can just gather up in our mind or something. And now we are in a state that we can collect a lot of data. And we've got power of machines, we've got knowledge of developing analytical algorithms. Why don't we make some tools to help us? And that could be mostly in my passion, is to make subjective analysis on really what's going on. And besides that, to do predictions. Mm-hmm. And predictions is what? For being prepared for what's coming. Mm-hmm. And so a little bit more, how to say, expecting what to be prepared for. And don't be surprised when it comes. So we've got maybe different decisions regarding that. If we see that climate is changing in a way that we do a lot of corn growing here, we see that it needs a lot of water. And since this climate is changing, we are not able to supply that water in this area. Just an example. Can we predict this? And can we predict mm-hmm. a different crop which can feed people here, and we can maybe grow that instead. So these kind of mm-hmm. predictions can help us to make different decision making, mm-hmm. Which helps us in close future.
Mm-hmm. And is it something that you are like working on right now?
Not actively, mm-hmm. but I would say my eyes are on this okay. topic as programming wise, I mean, not actively, but mm-hmm. about understanding what kind of data can help to this, what kind of algorithms can help to this, also what kind of human connections can make this happen, like it's mm-hmm. it's active in that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you also developed that AR app for farmers, like FarmAR. Mm-hmm. Can you, you know, talk about that?
Like, yes, that was my passion, to bring satellite data easily to farmers. And mm-hmm. it was because I was working with satellite data a lot. And I knew the difficulties. You have to download like 2.5 gigabyte data, mm-hmm. which is like whole country downloads, and you need special software to open it. Then you need to know how to process it to know your vegetation health.
What kind of data do farmers need to download?
It's the satellite data is freely available by European Space Agency. Mm-hmm. But this is more for technical usage. I mean, you really need mm-hmm. programming background to make use of the data. Yeah. And of course, farmers do not have that knowledge, most of them. So of course, some people might be curious.
And I'm not sure, like, I'm understanding, like, what kind of use can they, you know, make of that? Those are like satellite images, or like, you know, I'm really, you know, inexperienced with those issues, so I'm trying.
So satellites, when they make turn around the world, they make yes. pictures, and those pictures are very high resolution pictures. They've got also mm-hmm. some extra spectral bands that they see, mm-hmm. a little bit wider band than our eyes mm-hmm. can see. And if you analyze those bands, it's possible to understand surface level water, for instance, or mm-hmm. some diseases, or the crop health, how much crop they have. So you can mm-hmm. see the health of the crops and mm-hmm. or see some diseases. And mm-hmm. you can also see the surface level water by mm-hmm. applying some mathematics between those wavelengths. So this is what is done with software tools available. Mm-hmm. But this is mostly for professional developers, not for farmers. But mm-hmm. it's the farmer who wants to use that. Yeah, so far course. In my time, academics wrote a lot of papers and stuff. They developed further tools, but still it was not really available for farmer to benefit for it when they are just digging the ground and getting the potatoes mm-hmm. over there. And I wanted to give them opportunity with a simple app from their pocket. Mm-hmm. They can open and see, do I need to put more water here, or do I need to put fertilizer here? How mm-hmm. it is doing in general?
So I'm trying to like understand. What can like the data, like what kind of insights can, you know, that space data give them that, you know, they change something about their mm-hmm. like everyday operations at a farm, like you mentioned, like watering the plants and like what kind of insights does the data give them, and what actions can, you know, they take with that data to optimize their yeah. you know farming?
Yeah, you got great questions again.
Optimize
is my aim was to optimize use of water and fertilizer. And mm-hmm. if they don't know exactly what is going on, which areas are more wet, which areas are getting drier, which areas are very doing very well in terms of health, which areas need more support with fertilizers, if they don't know these local information, they spray fertilizer and water everywhere just mm-hmm. to make sure that they are safe, because they need to get mm-hmm. crops. And what they do is to load the tractors with fertilizer and spray it all around. This costs a lot of money, and also not environmental friendly to use excessive amount of fertilizer even in the areas when it's not needed. And if you use it only locally when it needs, you reduce your mm-hmm. costs, and you also make less stress on mm-hmm. environment.
And like how can like space images let you know that where you need like more fertilizer and where you like need less?
So with the app, my idea was to make it visible mm-hmm. With augmented reality, that you can see some points, areas around with augmented reality. And it just tells you that go there. And when you go there, maybe you also check visually with your eye. Maybe this area needs more water. Maybe this area needs more fertilizer. Doing suggestion mm-hmm. to farmer to operate a little bit more locally to areas like precision farming, sort of.
So it's kind of like the app, like you have like vast like areas of land, like farmland, and the app kind of tells you to go and look specifically at the areas that might need like fertilization and water.
Yes, exactly, to guide you there. My mm-hmm. my main inspiration that time when I started was Pokemon.
Uh-huh. Pokemon Go first.
I saw people, yes, Pokemon Go. I saw people just running out and trying to find Pokemons. And I was thinking if it's really that easy mm-hmm. to use, and also exciting for people to see, why don't I make my data to go there mm-hmm. and make benefit of it? Not only fun, but it's also fun, I think. Yeah.
And so that app, you know, I've seen like it received an award, and like at what stage, where did the app like come to be? Is it active? Is it like for research? Is it like open source? Like what happened?
It's not open source. Because the IP is registered in my company, and at uh-huh. the moment anybody can use it for free, and mm-hmm. it's on Apple Store. Yes. And we can put links in your description
of
your video, and yes. it's on the Apple Store. When I've got the European Commission awards mm-hmm. In 2016, I've got awards just having the idea. And I didn't mm-hmm. have anything implemented. And in 2017, I got award again. And that time I had something to show. Mm-hmm. But it was still not in a state to go to market. It was a little bit upper in the technological readiness mm-hmm. level, as showing some demos. But it was not suitable for market because there was no backend.
Yes.
And after 2017, the backend is developed further, and I put everything on Apple. Mm-hmm. And so far things go automatically well. People most of the time ask me how much time I put on on this. And honestly, currently I put only 1 hour a week just to check if there's some issues at the back end or not, or if there are some emails questions to answer, just 1 hour a week. But my passion was to automatize everything, and it's done. So that's I'm really happy. As long as a European Space Agency provides data, and as long as Apple Store is there, everything is there. But of course, at some level, the phones will change, for instance, and they will not maybe support the older libraries that which are used to develop this app, for instance. I'm sure that's going to happen someday, but maybe some years from now. Then maybe we need updates. And regarding updates, I hope in future I also embed these predictions ideas behind it about AI.
And have you got like farmers that are, you know, happy users of the app?
Yes, yes, I've got some happy users as farmers.
This is your app, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. 5-star. Yes.
And I've got some happy user farmers. And honestly, when I've got the European Commission awards, things became really so much in media, and I had a lot of users. So many people downloaded the app, and I was happy to see that at some point there were 13,000 users, and the app didn't crash. And that was validation for me that it can support a lot of users. But on the other hand, I was quite unhappy to know that just a small portion of these people are farmers, because people just show us have seen it on media, and they downloaded the app, they used it once, and they didn't need it anymore because they are not farmers. And then what happened? I released the second version afterwards. I announced that I'm deleting all the user database, and I did. And then I accepted only people farmers. And currently I've got small amount of users, but those are people who are really interested to use it for farming. So that's what I'm really happy. And yeah, the first version was able to gave me opportunity to test the scalability, but now I want to more be involved by seeing how it's being used and how it can serve. Yeah.
I guess one last question about the app. Like what does it see in those, you know, space images that signals it to like add fertilizer or like add water? Like like how does the app decide which area the farmer should like pay more attention to?
Yeah, again, this is only a suggestion from the app. And when we do such apps or algorithms, I think it's wise to be in a place we suggest things to user. Because in decision making, it's more a high responsibility. If you say that just treat dizzy here in this way, or if it's a medical app, for instance, operate this patient now. I think the apps, the software tools shouldn't make the final decision, even if it's very good AI. Still, we have to be in a, as an engineer, we should be supportive, but not the final decision making. And this how in this case it works. Again, as I said, these images are not like our phone camera image. Our phone camera has red, green, blue bands. But these images from satellite, they developed it in the specific purpose to get more wavelengths. And the mathematical algorithms, which I didn't invent myself, these are already in the literature, and this is open to calculate when you know the values of these different bands, how to calculate the water in the surface level, how to calculate the vegetation health of the leaves as the camera sees. So mathematical formulas by what you read on those wavelength values help you to generate a false colored map, for instance. And in this false colored map, you've got an idea of this area is healthy, this area is not. And on top of that, what Farmer app did is to put some augmented reality tags and show them like Pokemons and guide the people, like you can go there to see if you need more fertilizer or water like stuff.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Literally like combining like some crazy space dating Pokemon Go to help farmers. You also like you have an event coming up, AI to Save the Planet, right?
Yes.
It's like, yeah, would you like to talk about that?
Yes. And I want to announce that, and we will have bigger announcements, but currently we are developing the landing page, website, videos, and all the stuff. I'm collaborating with my friends. Maybe you are also aware about them. Fruit Punch AI Group from University of Eindhoven and TU Eindhoven. I don't know how the English version is called. University Technology of Eindhoven. I don't know how in English they convert.
So Eindhoven University of Technology or something.
Yes, probably. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't find the exact English translation.
Yeah, I get it. You know. Yeah, it's like there are a lot of Russian words that I have like no idea how to say them in English, so like no worries here.
So sometimes they say technical university, sometimes University of Technology. So I was a little bit wondering which one they chose. Okay, so with Fruit Punch AI team, we are collaborating to organize AI for to Save the Planet event. And we will have announcements on that when our landing page and our venue announcement is ready. And our idea was to make a national event. However, it looks like now with support of some bigger people coming in, it might be a European event. So we also tried to see that. And our initial idea was to organize an event to have lots of pitches, like 5-minute pitches. Selected people come to stage and make 5-minute pitch about an AI idea which saves the planet and to cope with climate change effects. And we also want to go a little bit further stage. We want to avert, of course, the bad pitches, but we also want to connect these people to companies or institutions to embed their pitches into reality, not to just stay there on the stage, but to make them real if it really works.
Yeah, so it's like people from, you know, possibly Europe coming to an event and basically, you know, trying to, you know, share their ideas with how like AI can help fight, you know, climate change and basically like help the planet.
Exactly.
In the process, you know, maybe like cultivate new ideas, and as you mentioned, then, you know, connecting like I guess the best pitches, you know, with the companies and, you know, with you know, trying to basically make real those pitches.
Yes, we want to support them to make real. But other than that, of course, if they are not selected as the best pitch, they can still meet companies there, still meet the institutions there, and their ideas can still have opportunity to find a way to go to implementation.
Yeah, and what is like the approximate date when you, you know, when you want this event to like happen?
We want it before the end of this year. So it should
Before the
be
end of this
like
year.
end of November, beginning of December. That's the time that we aim. And it also depends on do we want to make it an EU event or keep it in the Netherlands. But even if it's in the Netherlands, we will have invited speakers from all around the world. And we want also a little bit more fun. We will have a music band. We can also put a link of my friends. They are going to play their new album. They made the album on just focusing on climate change, and they made their songs for water and earth, our resources. So we can put a link to their new album. They will be there to give a concert for free for everyone. And what else we will have there? We will have some politicians, and we also prepared an invitation to our king. And we will have some climate activists there. And we want to be also a little bit colorful to have more climate passionate people. And we will also have demos if companies are interested to show their environmental friendly demos there, how to, for instance, make clean water from seawater or whatever, how to cycle and generate your energy at home. So if companies have such ideas, we will also have an exhibition room for them to present their ideas.
Yeah, I mean that's a great event idea, and you know if anybody watches it from Europe or like who maybe in Europe towards like the end of the year, you know, definitely check it out. We'll leave links in the description. Yeah, so yeah, I guess I wanted to, you know, ask you like one probably last question. Actually, it's probably not the last question because there might be follow-ups, but anyway, what is like the AI, you know, problem or solution, or like what is the AI problem that you are currently, you know, working on and like excited to work on? It kind of be like in the climate change domain, but like what are you like currently working on in AI?
I'm actively hands-on programming and working on in the field of medical data processing. And in my academic field, currently I put my passion into this. And of course, I'm not totally diverging my work from climate and agriculture farming, because what I see is we are engineers to solve any problem. And when I can solve a problem, I should be there. But my hands-on, I'm working on medical data, and I'm more putting my efforts on explainable AI. And I try to develop methods which learn from doctors' behaviors, and also to see when it's learning, how it's learning. Is it learning the good thing, like these adversarial attacks, for instance, recognize different things when some pixels are removed or some noise is added, and such things can happen in real life, not because they want to attack, but just because they use some uncontrolled conditions as input. And when we want to develop a product for hospital, we cannot be there to say, doctor, make the picture like this, put the patient like this, sit next to window, get good illumination. We cannot be there to do that. So picture can have something bright in the image, and then because of this brightness, like adversarial attacks, does it detect something different? Suddenly it decides that the patient is cancer and needs to go to surgery. Actually, it was nothing. So, how to deal with how AI is learning and making decision, and to strengthen the algorithms. I'm mostly interested these days in explainable AI, and to get more understanding, develop more methods for understanding how AI is learning. Is it learning the good thing? And how to learn also from doctors.
Yeah, so you're, you know, hands-on, trying to also, you know, create and apply AIs in the in medicine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, I want to say something which is very interests me is most of the things that they use for doctors for making decision is not a quantitative data. It's not a laboratory analysis like something. A doctor, when you visit the doctor, makes a decision just intuitively. And they, since they see a lot of patients, they develop some intuition about your level of disease. Maybe you go there with cramps in your stomach, but the doctor has a knowledge that it's nothing about stomach, but something else is triggering the stomach, which is more urgent to solve. So they've got this intuition developed. And they don't do it with most of the time with laboratory analysis of data. And if they had tables, like Excel tables, pictures, we can train AI and just get the result. But when it's intuition, how can I train an AI to help doctor to make similar decisions? And at the moment, I'm also trying to see what kind of features around that they sense is helping them to make this intuition happen. So what kind of data is more meaningful to collect and gather up to make this intuition like human?
Interesting. Very interesting. It's like you
I don't have an answer for that. I don't know. But I'm interested to know.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting area. It's like you are trying is it correct that you are kind of like trying to understand how the doctor's intuition work and try to like at kind of like almost what the doctors look when trying to make a diagnosis and then figure out how to give that to an AI and then train it on something like figuring out how to...
Or maybe it's more like what kind of data I should collect and understanding the value of the data, because now we think that for, let's say, this stomach example, maybe the AI should be trained with laboratory results, with Excel tables, get from stomach and get this. But actually, it's nothing related to stomach in regard to doctor's intuition. So what kind of features in general are needed? So maybe I should collect different data, not stomach data from laboratory, but I should be collecting different data to make similar decision like doctor's intuition. But we don't know.
Yeah, it's like, you know, who knows, you know, the doctor may like look at your face, like see some something like weird on your skin, and that will mean it's some, you know, it may be something that could explain the like pain in the stomach, basically.
Maybe you were just speaking slow, and then he had an idea that you're sleeping less, and then he made a decision that, ah, I see your skin color like this, and you sleep less, then... Probably that goes to, so he makes a chain of the decisions which are not related to stomach at all. And what kind of features make this happen?
Yeah, I can totally see how this, you know, discovery of like, you know, new inputs to potential AIs can, you know, it can probably, you know, help the doctors themselves, you know, like a second check, second checking, you know, their intuitions, and potentially, you know, it can probably be able to diagnose some stuff, you know, itself, and, you know, for cheap, probably,
Exactly, and this is why sometimes people seek for more doctors to get a different opinion, because they want somebody with different experience, different expertise. It's not because they've got a different laboratory analysis. When they got the blood check or other things checked, they got the same quantitative result. And if we have AI only looking those tables and those results, then it will give the same result. But why people go to different doctors to get a different mm-hmm. opinion? With their expertise, they've got different intuition mm-hmm. developed. So can the AI do something similar? That's the question, not an answer.
Yes. I can see, you know, how this, you know, assistance, to basically it's like you're adding at least one pair of artificial eyes and brains to making a diagnosis. And, you know, this is probably, I definitely think that, you know, it's one of the important applications.
One step further. If we can really develop an AI which is making those intuition, can it teach to new doctors, for instance?
Yeah. Can it? What do you think? We don't know. Yeah. Or do we? Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing, you know, if we could then understand how... like right now, deep learning networks, like they're mostly black boxes, right? And if we also make progress towards understanding the, like, how the network, like what it's learned on to a level that, you know, how we humans can understand that, you know, like maybe, I don't know, if we could like take a neural net and it would output some diagrams or some pictures, some written word, I don't know, off of like what it's learned. Like a doctor who would be trying to explain his intuition, I think it could be a valuable learning tool, because I think that human intuition is not, you know, going anytime soon anywhere, so whatever can, you know, teach humans to be better, and then adding the support from AIs, I mean like in the medical field, I think it's a big deal. It's super interesting.
Not only in medical field, but in self-driving cars or anything else in industry. Human intuition is so great, so powerful, unexplainable. I don't think we mm-hmm. will be able to explain it. But on the other hand, we are quite prone to distraction. Mm-hmm. And those distraction is even much more these days by just... smartphone that we mm-hmm. carry around, and all the other things in our minds because of the just system that we are in, all the news and stuff, and mm-hmm. That's we are quite open to distraction. Maybe AI also helps with using the power of intuition, learning mm-hmm. little bit, replicating it, but on the other hand, not being distracted by you when it's making decisions by it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, even if it's not as good as a doctor, because, you know, it's so focused, right? It doesn't get distracted. It can bring tremendous amounts of value. Well, you know, it's super exciting to see where, you know, you exploring this topic will lead, and we'll probably be able to talk about that again. And now I think, you know, it's the time to wrap up. We've almost like hit an hour, so do you want to like say some, you know, final words and something like that?
I'm so excited to talk to you. Thank you very much for having me in your channel.
It was my pleasure,
and I'm so much pleased to meet you. It was very nice talk. Thank you very much for your great questions. I hope we make another meetup later, maybe in future. We make a different setup.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We will maybe do a little bit more technical look into things. That would be also mm-hmm. interesting. But if people have comments, they've got questions, maybe they can also leave their comments under the video.
Of course.
So we can see what they want to see more.
Yeah, and if you wanna hear more from Beryl, follow her on Twitter. I'll leave link in the description. Is there anything else people should follow you? Anywhere else?
I think LinkedIn and Twitter, that's it.
Yeah, that's great. So thank you so much for being on the show, Beryl. It was my pleasure. And thanks for watching or listening, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Yeah. Thank you.